Donald on the Kitchen talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We get together here once a week, live at KHOI Community Radio in downtown Ames. We gather around our kitchen table and we invite you
and smack
to
our
join
lips
us
a little bit. Taste a few things.
Yeah, we do tasting on the radio and do our best to tell you what it tastes like, because it's important to celebrate food, celebrate local food, celebrate good food.
I had a friend said, because we're going to do a cheese show today, said, "Well, how do you eat on air, and how do you express?" I mean, after all, food is not an audio thing. And I said, "Well, we make a lot of noises.
Just tune in,
smacking
tune
noises.
In, stay with us, and find out. If you're not hungry by the end of this show, well, more power to you. Turn on hard rock or something. Listen to something else."
I have a little success. Last week we talked about the Battle Cry, Iowa, the new smokehouse restaurant. So I went out for a sandwich because I just can't stay away from there. And they said 12 people came in because they heard about it on the radio and it sounded good. And I thought, hallelujah, somebody's listening. All right.
Oh, three cheers for all of you out there, and I hope you are enjoying local food. This is Community Radio. This is KHOI, and we get by with a little help from our friends.
Yes, support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocer in Ames, community-owned, community-focused, since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
Yes, and we do. Today, we're going to take a short field trip to an urban backyard here. And we're going to, like Donna said, we're going to talk about cheese. This tour that we took is part of the Wheatsfield Summer Tour. They've been going to backyards and people have been talking about their experiences. We visited the backyard, the urban farm of Helen Gunderson. It is much more than a backyard. We talked about
it's two backyards,
it's
as
two
a matter
backyards.
Of fact.
And actually, as befits a good gardener, she's even talked some other neighbors that abut her backyard into
I would say it's an injustice just to call her a gardener.
She's a farmer. Helen Gunderson has been a great part of Central Iowa food community for a long time. We also talked about permaculture, and she actually does have what I would consider a permaculture kind of term. It's a food forest. It's not just a garden out there
it's beautiful.
It's lots of things growing permanently, perennials and annuals. Like Donna said, two backyards all connected. When you want to farm, you just find a way. Helen told us the story of how her urban farm got its start. It seems she had a strong desire to propagate and preserve the wealthy apple tree on her grandparents' farm, and she was
wealthy is the name of the apple. It is a wealthy apple.
And at the time, she was living in an apartment, and so she propagated and grafted and preserved that apple tree from her parents' farm, and then we talked to her about that.
Well, Helen, I want to know what the apples taste like. What's the variety?
Wealthy.
Did a pie apple, an eating apple?
Peter Gideon in the 1800s came from the East Coast. Peter Gideon from the East Coast came to Minnesota in the mid-1800s. And he had been told there's no way you can grow apples in Minnesota. It's just too cold. And somehow he would send back east, and I'm not sure just how he tested, but I think he would get new starts of trees and grow them and taste them and until he found one that you like. And I don't know if you folks know, but you cannot take an apple seed and grow an apple and have it be predictable what it would be like. So to get a predictable one is you find a fruit that you really like, and then from that tree you take cyanwood and graft it to rootstock. So he did that, and he developed this, and he named it after his wife, whose name was Wealthy. And I think she was
a wealthy wife.
I think she was the daughter of a Unitarian Universalist minister. Peter was outspoken and wrote lots of letters to the editor. He might be a fan of Bernie Sanders if they'd been in the same era. But then what happened was I think he died almost penniless because he put so much into, you know, buying the fruit and getting it and trying it. And then at some point, the University of Minnesota Extension claimed that it discovered the wealthy tree. So I know where there's a book about the history of that tree. It is, it's crunchy and tart. When I was a kid, I ate too many green ones and would get a sick stomach, you know, uneven.
Yes, we talked about an apple tree, and then we all got up and walked around this amazing, amazing backyard. We talked about the concept of permaculture. Permaculture is a philosophy of working with the earth as opposed to against it, and mainly it has three principles: care for earth, care for people, and care for fairness, community, equitability, justice. All those three things make, I think, a really good farmer. We walked around and found out lots of wonderful things in this backyard, including Helen's chickens.
So anyway, in the winter, they get the whole garage, and that's another part of, I guess, what you'd call the system here, is since I don't have a car, the garage can be a barn. And in the winter, they get that. And in the summer, they get their hotel is here, and this run is here. And I think if we move this way and we go like this,
happiest chickens in the universe. Yeah, Helen has chickens. Helen has a lovely backyard. We talked to people that were helping her out. We talked to Hannah and Adam about their experiences working with Helen. And then under one of her beautiful peach trees, Helen continued the tour and told us more about the farm and her thoughts on living in her urban farm.
I'd say one thing I really like about working here is that, I mean, we work outside. You kind of do your traditional farming things, but we also do, like, a lot of cooking and prep work. Like, last week we spent probably 3 hours making sauerkraut. And I love to cook, but I had never made sauerkraut. So that was, like, an amazing skill that I got to acquire that I didn't really with me for a long time.
Good.
But I have made four trees from it. So this is a tree.
We also made fermented beets and fermented carrots.
You can get more apples. Mm-hmm. But the thing with the dwarf trees, it has to be straight.
What is that?
That's aronia berries.
Aronia berries?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I thought it was an awfully fat elderberry.
They are probably as astringent as, well, I won't say. See Donna's face? Yeah. But
Donna and I make aronia berry jokes all the time.
Yeah, it was really a really big deal in thing, because what is it, really high in antioxidants?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Higher than even blueberries.
Mm-hmm. Very good for you, but it does pucker you up.
Yes, but you know, I have a lot that are in the freezer from last year, and so I've started adding a new dish to my menu, and that is to have oatmeal with some aronia berries, some gooseberries, some cherries, and maybe some yogurt or maybe some molasses. And it's really very good. I think, I remember years ago reading something where a fellow had done a book and he'd interviewed the Amish about their profit loss schedule, you know. And so the Amish people had printed up this thing telling what their expenses were and their income. And the author said, well, where's your column for labor? And they said, labor is really our gift. You know, they looked at being able to work with that as a gift. This is not for everybody. Yesterday, I was out here. I don't know if I was hallucinating because of the heat and humidity, but I had on my farmer hat and you know, my plaid cotton long sleeve shirt and baggy pants, and I was thoroughly enjoying working out here. And I looked up and there was something of how the sun came through the trees. And this seemed, I don't know if you call it epiphany or a mystical moment. You know, I had this sense that I was at my grandparents' farm. And at my grandparents' farm, as a middle child of six, or one of the middle children, I really felt an unconditional acceptance. And so yesterday, I just felt so absolutely whole. And then I think you had called about coming to get peaches, and I just thought, that's the kind of connections that really make my life worth living. Well, one of the reasons that makes it worth living. But, and then the other thing was, for the first time in ages, I heard a mourning dove. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, and I associate that sound with my grandparents' farm, and I just, this is what brings me life and good energy. I would not want to be living out in the country. I like being able to live without having a car. Mm-hmm. And I like to be able to bike around town and have access to Wheatsfield and different things like that.
There. That was a visit to Helen Gunderson's backyard, a fine urban farm.
Right here in Ames.
Right here in Ames, and that was part of the Wheatsfield summer tour. We learned a lot about the possibilities of a backyard. She combines wonderfully. She combines growing food and growing community all at the same time. And it's a fine way to live. It's always nice to visit somebody else's farm and get some ideas. So, Donna, we have a guest in the studio today.
Yes, we do. We're going to get really cheesy today, guys. So we have Connie Lawrence, who is the cheesemonger at Wheatsfield. And she also used to be a cheese maker. They had a very renowned goat cheese called Northern Prairie Chev. That was, I would say, Connie, when you were doing that, that was the early days of really good American cheeses. So congratulations for being on the cutting edge. So we have our own avant-garde cheese person here. So Connie and I, and mostly Connie, went to the American Cheese Society. We've talked about it. It was coming up here, and it was in Denver. Was it a week ago?
Des Moines.
Oh, it'll be in Denver next year. Sorry, yeah. It was in Des Moines. Thank you, Lana. And there were over 1,800 cheeses.
Repeat that.
1,800. I think somebody said 1,840.
Yes.
How was that? Like mountains of cheese, Connie.
It was overwhelming.
Oh, yes, it was.
But those are the number of cheeses that were entered in the contest, mm-hmm. which was quite remarkable.
Yeah, it is the biggest American cheese. It's quite prestigious.
It is, actually, yes.
They're serious there.
Yes, there were 1,200 people who attended. And I actually met people from all over the world. So it wasn't American, but it was quite amazing.
Well, our cheeses are becoming quite interesting.
They are, mm-hmm. yes.
Because we have a lot of good dairy.
Some say perhaps better than some of the European cheeses.
I would say in a lot of ways. I have to say I have a little prejudice. I married a Frenchman, so I have eaten a lot of French cheeses in France. And I really think that for a long time, like all our Camembert was, you know, had to come from France. It doesn't taste the same once it's crossed the ocean. I don't care if they fly it in an airplane or not. It's just too much handling. So when we started to have really good Camemberts and softer cheeses in this country, then we start to understand what they taste like in their native country. Our cheeses in this country are really fine.
They
really,
are.
Really
yes.
fine.
Yes.
And we have such a big country that we have all kinds of cheeses.
We do, and we are very fortunate to have a lot of cheeses in our region.
Yes.
Wisconsin and Minnesota
yes.
are just full of, I don't even know how many cheese companies, and more all the time.
And a few here in Iowa.
Some in Iowa, some brand new ones in Iowa. So more things coming all the time.
Uh-huh. Now, and of course there are like, it's like the dog shows. There's the best of show and there's
yes.
the this and that. So are there any particular ones that just knocked your socks off that we'll be able to taste here in town?
Well, absolutely, yes. One of them I'm particularly fond of. It is actually produced by Flory's Homestead Creamery.
Oh, we've had that. That's been here. We've had it. Yes.
Janesport, Missouri.
Uh-huh.
which is Amish territory, very interesting scenic area. And then it is brought into Iowa after 60 days. It is raw milk cheese produced by the local Amish farmers. And
say the name again,
Flory's Truckle.
Truckle.
And
right.
Truckle is the shape.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of a cylinder. It's a very old-time English way of making cheddar. Mm-hmm. It is a bandaged cheese, which means it is covered in lard and then is bandaged with cheesecloth and more lard over the top. And then Rufus Musser and his family from Milton Creamery do the aging.
Let's talk about Rufus. Rufus has done a lot to bring good cheese into Iowa.
He is quite the visionary.
Milton Creamery.
Yes.
In Milton.
In Milton, Iowa, which is down south of Oskaloosa.
Home of our very, very famous Prairie Breeze cheese,
yes.
Which could easily be my most favorite cheese on the planet. And they won.
Yes.
Did they win Best of Show? What did they win?
They won best all around cheddar in the world a few years ago in England.
That's
which
right.
Is really prestigious.
That's right. That's a big deal.
Yes.
And they won something at the American Cheese Society just before that.
Yes, they've placed really well.
Right.
I can't recall exactly all the placings because it's a
right.
lot. But
yeah.
The Truckle won first place in their division, which was the aged bandaged cheddars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Milton Creamery did do all the aging.
So basically, Rufus, what's Rufus's last name?
Musser.
Rufus Musser. Not only are they producing cheese in Milton, but he's also going around, I mean, amongst the Amish and the other Anabaptists, there are mm-hmm. a lot of small dairy producers. So,
absolutely.
So Rufus has given them an opportunity. He built, what, an aging facility?
Yes. And every cheese, the Truckle, for example, has its own aging room.
Mm-hmm.
They also age a goat cheddar from clear down in the Boot Hills of Missouri.
Is that the smoked?
Called Country Queen.
Is that the smoked one that I like
No,
too?
The smoked one comes from Flory's.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yes,
right.
And you'll notice it's always in small, narrow pieces because Tim Flory does the smoking himself, and he wants it to be smoked all the way through. So he only smokes it in small pieces.
It's really wonderful.
It's really delicious.
So really, Rufus has not only produced his own cheese that we all love, but he's also making other cheeses available. So
yes.
Does he do the distribution? So he ages
and then distributes, and I know it goes as far as each coast. They've got New York and California accounts,
mm-hmm.
and he flies to do sampling, and very interesting visionary man, especially if you consider he only has an eighth grade education.
Sounds like a wonderful, sounds like a wonderful example of cooperation.
Absolutely.
These are small producers, and to make an aging room, to distribute, to fly all over and market, it's hard
and
to do
Rufus's
that if you're a small
son
producer.
Is the cheesemaker, right, for Prairie Breeze?
He was up until recently.
Oh.
They have someone new.
Mm-hmm.
Galen was the cheesemaker who worked for them for a number of years. But he has decided that he would like to try some other things for a while, and they're hoping he comes back. But their son, Junior, now works in the office and does a lot of the bookkeeping background sort of things. And then they have a lot of other community people involved.
So it's a family business, and
they are
bringing good things to Iowa.
Good things to
so
Iowa.
So we also had a first place winner with an Iowa cheese, Lois Reichardt
from
Dairy Air Creamery. Dairy
That's
Air.
Goat. Is it goat or goat
is
and sheep?
Goat.
It's all goat. Right.
And this one was goat. She placed first in the soft ripened with her Torta du Latte.
Oh, I haven't even tried that
one. It's just amazing. It's like a brick shape.
Mm-hmm.
With layers of ash in the middle and then layers of ash and then the, like the camembert brie, mold growth on the outside.
Ooh.
It's absolutely delicious, very tangy. She also placed second or third, I've forgotten exactly which, in her feta, which is the mixed sheep and goat milk feta. Also good.
Which we've had at Wheatsfield for years.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we have lots of things to be proud of. I also tasted a number of cheeses that are amazing. They are raw milk, some of them grass-fed. Not only tasted them, but had some education on the health benefits of the raw milk cheeses.
A lot of discussion. I'm down for that one. Yep.
A lot of discussion on fermenting and how good all the probiotics are in fermented. And cheese is part of the fermented family of foods. So that was part
of the conversation.
This is
like my favorite part.
Good.
Yes.
We'll get back to discussing all these great topics. This is KHOI. This is the Donalana Kitchen. KHOI FM 89.1 Story City Ames. And we're going to have a little music break here. And as a nod to cheese, milk products, and the cows, sheep, and goats, and all the folks who care for them, here's a little English country dance music from the 17th century called the Merry Milkmaids. The Donalana Kitchen. We're talking to Connie Lawrence about cheese because there was a huge cheese event.
Oh, we're the Merry Milkmaids today for sure.
Oh, we are. There was a wonderful, huge cheese event in Des Moines. That both Donna and Connie went to, and lots of other people too. I guess they needed extra hands down there. And Connie, you said you learned a lot down there.
Because you did, there are not just this big tasting and contest. There's all kinds of cheese education, cheese business.
3 days of classes. And there were everything from a track where it was all cheese making information. There was also the retailer distribution track, which is more what we're interested in. It was a way to meet new distributors, meet new people who are producing cheese. So I have a handle on some new ideas for distributors, number one.
Oh, boy, we're going to have some new surprises.
We had a really good opportunity for nutrition, too, and talking about the differences in, for example, grass-fed cheeses versus traditional. The grass-fed, they're finding a lot more omega-3s and health benefits that
different
way.
Fatty acid profile completely there's no corn or grains in their diet. Big deal.
And we're also talking about more raw milk cheeses, and most of the states now are allowing raw milk cheese to be produced if it is aged in the production facility, and everything is well documented for 60 days or more.
Oh, it has to – it's still 60 days.
It's still 60 days.
It's got to be aged. Right.
And then after that, then it can be released for aging or distribution. But they're finding all of the different enzymes and things in the cheese make it so much easier to digest.
So all the things they've been saying about raw milk are true, that they are, that it is desirable to have raw milk.
It is desirable in theory. I will have a quantifier. You do want to know where your source is.
This is, I think, always been the deal.
Yes.
Raw milk is only good insofar as the dairy facilities are extremely clean.
Yes.
Which really should be true for the non-milk
exactly.
as well.
For the non-pasteurized.
Everybody should
everything.
Have a clean dairy.
Or for the pasteurized, rather, yes.
Yeah, I mean, because really, pasteurization is just a way to make up for lack of good milk handling in many In a sense.
In a sense,
because
yes.
it kills everything that shouldn't have been there anyway.
Exactly, exactly. And early days when facilities were not clean, when people didn't have the education about
bacteria
and so forth.
Nor the refrigeration.
No refrigeration. It really solved a lot of issues. Tuberculosis and some illnesses were really held at bay and somewhat eradicated because of pasteurization. But now that we know more and we understand more,
and
the
have
options are there.
Way different technical skills than
Absolutely.
We used to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the fermentation of cheeses, whether they're raw or not, makes them, you know, like sauerkraut, yogurts. They're all full of probiotics, which are really, really good for your intestines.
Yes, and I personally think of aging versus the word fermentation is pretty much the same thing,
mm-hmm.
but it's really a process of breaking down the butterfat and breaking down the protein within the cheese body itself. And different things occur when that happens. A couple of positives. We talked about aged cheddars and parmesans, for example, have mm-hmm. little crystals in them.
Mm-hmm.
The crystals can be calcium lactate. They can also be a protein. And as it turns out, the protein is actually an amino acid, so it's a partial protein that releases mm-hmm. dopamine into your body, which makes you feel happier. So
I knew it. I knew there was a reason. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love so, those little crunchy yes. bits in the
Eating
cheese.
Eating good cheese makes you happier. I always knew that.
Oh, yeah. There's so many different kinds. Donna made an allusion to this was a big event in Des Moines, the
American Cheese Society.
American Cheese Society. It was kind of like the Olympics. It was – and you mentioned the – sort of like one of those dog shows. You know, well, I don't know. That's not really
best
a very
in
good
show.
That's
yes,
not that's not absolutely. Really a good analogy. Cheese and dogs, but just think of the different breeds of dogs and how a basic dog can be anything from teeny tiny to way too big and slobbery. But cheeses too. And all these dairy products, there are so many different
things. I didn't count the categories, but what do you think? 20, 30? You know.
Easily. So many that it's easy to become overwhelmed.
Oh, it definitely
is. So imagine walking into the Iowa Event Center mm-hmm. and every category had maybe 3 or 4 8-foot tables piled with cheeses all cut,
yeah,
ready to try.
Cheeses, butters, spreads. Flavored cheeses.
Everything imaginable.
Farmsteaded cheeses. Actually, Connie, clear this up for me. What are we calling farmsteaded these days?
Farmstead indicates that the cheese is made from the milk produced on the same farm, and it's only that milk.
But it has a lot of different styles. Like
it can be any style. Uh-huh. It can be any kind of milk. It can be water buffalo milk. It can be cow, goat, sheep, any kind of milk, but it has to be produced on the same farm
from
as
that milk
the cheese
only.
That is produced mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, an artisan cheese is totally different. It can be farmstead. It can be a blend of milk from lots of different farms. Artisan generally indicates that it is something that is their own recipe.
Mm-hmm.
It is something a little bit unusual. A lot of times
and
it's
not
a small company.
Yeah, I was going to say, scale has a lot to do with it.
Scale does, but it can be a larger company too. But it generally means something special, not necessarily the everyday cheddar that you put on a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
This would be something you'd expect a little more to be in the development, and it would be something a little more fun.
Now, one of the things at the cheese show is all these people come who are cheese maker suppliers, right, who have the different cultures. And, like, for example, if you want to make camembert,
mm-hmm.
you got to get your milk source down and mm-hmm. get your processing facility. Mm-hmm. But then do you buy the inoculant?
Yes, most people do. because you want it to be really clean and not contaminated with anything that might give you an off flavor, off color, or any taste, anything involved.
So how many, maybe, would you guess there's maybe 10 or 15 people in this country that sell inoculants?
I would, last I knew there were not that many, maybe four or five.
Oh, really?
Not that many.
Okay.
It is quite involved. It has to be absolutely sterile when you're thinking about culturing a minute bacteria.
So if you want to be a cheesemaker and let's look at Kevin Diesel, for example, right? Mm-hmm. He's been growing his cow herd up. Mm-hmm. He's built his dairy barn. He knows the kind of cheese he wants to make. So you just call these people up and you talk about your milk and what you want to make and they suggest what to use?
You can actually hire cheese consultants.
So do they come down and taste your milk?
They come and they talk to you and you can work with them. Everything from discussing what your options are, discussing what you're feeding, lots of different things mm-hmm. are involved, yes. Mm-hmm. There are actually not a large number of cultures to choose from, mm-hmm. to be honest. So that's where some of the art comes from as far as blending cultures. It also depends.
Now, does the cheesemaker blend or the company that's making the cultures? They help you blend the culture?
Both. Okay. You can have a special blend.
Mm-hmm.
I know Prairie Breeze has a private blend of cultures that they add, and mm-hmm. that provides generally what is decided is the type of culture decides the type of cheese. For mm-hmm. example, there is a mesophilic culture, which is a low temperature, your Cheddar's, Gouda's, Colby's, Jack's, that family. And then you have the thermophilic cultures, which are the higher temperatures, your grounded type, like your Parmesan, Romano, that type of cheese, where you're going to heat that milk a lot hotter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of two different families of cultures.
All right, so does that mean, for example, you're not going to get a raw milk Parmesan? Because it has to be heated too.
You can get a raw milk Parmesan, but you're not heating that to the same temperature as pasteurization.
Pasteurization, so it's still lower
is
than
a
that.
Minimum of 142. I've kind of forgotten exactly mm-hmm. the correct number. It's been a while, but Parmesan, you're going to heat it up to maybe 110 degrees versus 90
degrees.
So you
could still stick your finger in it if you need to.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
So
okay.
It's not like it's hot, but warmer than is ideal for the mesophilic cultures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's also, when you're talking about like the Camemberts, the Brie's, that sort of thing, blue cheeses, you're also adding a mold culture. So it's different families of penicillin. Mm-hmm. Or
is that just for the blues?
Those are the blues or the Camemberts.
Camemberts have a penicillin in them.
Yes. Ah. That's what the white mold is.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And Swiss also has a different culture added to it because the bacteria giving off gas as it
makes
grows
the little
in the cheese
bubbles,
makes the
right.
holes in there.
Yeah.
Yes. There's a whole study all around the hole size in Swiss cheese.
Ooh.
Yes.
It's good that there are people keeping track of all of this stuff.
All the details, yes.
Well, Donna said we're going to taste something. So,
yes.
Get your ears up to the radio because we've got some interesting looking things here.
Part of the fun of the cheese show, because when you go there and you're tasting, I mean, I don't know how your palate was, but I was completely overwhelmed by the end of it. It's like, what did I taste? I mean, you go from one deliciousness to the other. But
yes.
So coming home, I was able to grab an extraordinary number, like two of my little cloth bags full of cheeses. So I've brought in, first of all, I spread the bounty around town because everybody, I don't know anybody that doesn't love cheese. But I brought in four this morning that we're going to taste. And Connie, they have just, I didn't even know what I was getting, you know. They have a name on them, but, you know, doesn't even say too much about it. But Connie's going to help us demystify. So which one are we starting with, Connie? This one?
The first one is a goat cheese. It is it's called a lactic cheese, which means it is kind of soft. It's gooey. It's creamy in the middle.
It's actually beautiful. It comes in a little plastic container because
yes.
it would probably
very fragile.
Go all over. And it says Cochrane Farms, St. Johnsville.
And it would be kind of like Lois Reichardt's Robiola.
Okay. Okay.
Where it's going to be very creamy, especially
I mean,
as it's more
wet
mature.
On the inside. Yes. Here, Lana, you're going to have the first taste. It is drippy. Be careful. So it has this kind of soft, poofy, outside crusty kind of thing.
Almost, I think of it as almost like a mushroom-looking effect
kind
on the
of,
outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get on the inside, and it's just wet and runny. Here's your bit, Connie. Tell us what you think.
So one of the things I get asked a lot is, can I eat the rind? So something like this, yes. The outside of this is, you know, kind of pebbly. It's kind of soft, moist. You absolutely can choose to eat it, or you can eat just the interior, which is the creamy part.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a camembert, you can eat the rind, or you can choose to not eat the rind. It's going to be a form of mushroomy flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the brie. You can eat it or not.
Is this is not the same as a brie.
It is not.
Okay. Now, just looking at it, it looks more like an uncooked pie crust on the outside.
Good descriptor, Lana.
It looks good, but a brie is white, and this is golden.
So if I remember correctly.
And this is much softer, too.
This is actually a yeast act. There's some yeast involved in this particular kind of cheese.
My goodness.
Whereas you would not find yeast in these other kinds. Other than, now we have a beer washed cheese, and there is yeasted beer. So we are going to have a little bit of that yeasty flavor. So there are differences.
What would you not eat the rind on? Obviously, if it's wrapped in something that's inedible or wax or what else?
If it's waxed, if it has, there are some products that are painted on the outside to prevent mold growth.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to feel a little bit more like plastic feel to them. They're going to be harder. Cut that part off.
Mm-hmm.
There are some actually edible rinds that don't look like they're edible necessarily. They're kind of papery. It's okay to eat those. I generally don't just because the mouthfeel isn't very good. But it's fairly obvious. And if you ever have a question, I'm at Wheatsfield. My assistant, Nan Bonfils, is there often as well. And we will be happy to talk to you. Or if you're at another cheese counter somewhere, ask them if you're just not sure.
Mm-hmm. So the name of this wonderfully mushy, unusual cheese is called?
Cochrane Farm. I would guess that's the maker. And it's called a St. Johnsville. What do you think, Connie?
I like it. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Is there a description of what kind of cheese that is? You said it's not a brie.
It's goat.
It is goat. It is a lactic soft ripened cheese.
Lactic soft ripened cheese.
All right. So like the category that it was entered into would be called lactic soft ripened or just soft ripened or...
Now, that I'm not positive of because they break things into different categories.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been one who entered the contest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like going to a flower show. You have to identify what the categories are. Some are really easy to identify, obviously. But some are not. You have to be involved in it to really understand all of them.
That's what's really nice about this whole thing.
I'm gonna read from the list of winners. Some of them are called... Okay, here's some categories. Fresh, unripened, and there were soft ripened.
Well, and some are obvious. Butter or flavored butter.
Right.
Cheddar, aged
cheddars. Everybody
cheddars.
Knows cheddars.
Yes.
Blue molded. Hispanic and Portuguese style cheeses.
That's
did you taste any of those?
I'm sure I did.
It looked really interesting.
As you say, though, it gets to be overwhelming when there's 1,800. I found myself taking a picture of things that I really enjoyed. So
what
I
a good
go
idea.
And
right.
research that because you cannot remember
well,
all
that's
those
why
choices.
I was so happy to carry some home because you want to, like, I've been having a new cheese a day kind of thing.
Well, and I might say I did purchase some at the end of the evening, too, and brought them back to Wheatsfield. So we have a small collection of one-of-a-kind cheeses, some absolutely amazing blues from New York, from Pennsylvania, from Aspen, Colorado, but I could only get small quantities.
Mm-hmm. So,
and yeah. some we will not have again. So take advantage while you can.
That's true for cheeses.
This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking cheese. This is KHOI.
Oh, we got to speed it.
This is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Yum. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking cheese with Connie Lawrence.
We're not just talking about it, folks. We are eating
Donna's
cheese.
Having a very good time. So clear your palates out there. Kind of clear your mind. Prepare your mind for brie.
So, well, we're not sure it's a brie. This next taster is it's from a Krimnikuli artisan cheese, and this is called a Leopold. My first impression is it's a little salty, but what do you think?
I think it's very salty, too. At first, we thought it might be a Camembert. It has been marked as raw milk, and I'm not sure if it's Camembert or Brie, to be honest. It looks
similar. And what would you distinguish?
I generally think of a Camembert being a little bit richer, more robust flavor.
Well, and runnier, kind of, isn't it?
And it depends on the aging. Mm. If it's more aged, it's going to be runnier. And room temperature, too, is going to be a little more runny. But this one is more mild. I feel like it's more brie-like than Camembert.
Mm-hmm. But what do you think about the saltiness of it?
A little salter than I would normally expect. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And salt is added to some of these cheeses?
Almost all cheese has salt. Mm-hmm. Salt has a couple of properties that are beneficial. One, as a preservative. Salt is added, first of all, kind of towards the end of the cheese making process. And if you're making curds, for example, adding the salt increases the surface tension. So when you bite into a fresh cheese curd, it's squeaky against your teeth, surface tension.
Oh, there it comes from, the squeaky cheese curds. Yes, okay.
And it is used then on fresh wheels to draw some of the moisture to the surface and be released so that the cheese can dry. If it remains too moist inside, it is going to spoil. It's not going to age properly. So salt helps with that. It also helps with flavor. If you've ever had unsalted cheese, it's pretty flat. And it is a natural preservative. So but salt is very useful.
I mean, am I wrong about this one?
No, I think it's a little salty.
Yes. If you get too much salt, you cover up some of the nuances in it.
Exactly.
Although, I have to say, it's a beautiful-looking cheese. It's perfectly ripened to the point where it's like gooey on the outside, but you still got a little more body on the inside. I mean,
yes,
you know. Okay, next cheese is called a Mount Townsend Creamery Off Kilter.
Yes.
And what do we think this one is?
This is a cheese that has been washed in beer. So you should have, you should have a little bit of that beer yeasty flavor at the edge, especially on the outside. I generally find them to be very creamy, somewhat bitter sometimes towards the end.
You got it in there.
Yes.
Right, very interesting.
Really?
But not in an offensive way.
Not in an offensive way,
no. The bitter in this gives it a complexity on the tongue, really?
Exactly.
Oh, I really like this one. So this is Mount Townsend Creamy. Any idea where that is?
Mount Townsend, California, I think.
Is it?
We'll have to check on that.
Okay,
for sure.
it's called Off Kilter.
This is another little round cheese. Are these the sizes that they are normally marketed in, or were these sizes for the
show?
No,
I think this is how they are marketed.
Beer wash cheeses can, well, all cheeses can be different sizes.
Any sizes, okay.
A lot of these kinds of cheeses we have right here are made in molds. The fresh curds are placed in the mold, and this is the size of the mold that they've chosen. And then the liquid drains out, and that's how the shape comes from. You'll see this one has little lines on it.
Yeah,
there were little lines built into the mold. I've seen some that have like a basket weave shape, and that comes from the shape of the mold. Yes, and some of this can be the mat that the cheese actually ages on as well. We'll leave it imprint.
Mm-hmm. So how are they doing a washed rind like this?
They are actually washing it as a salty brine made with beer. With beer, it can be wine, it can be just salty water, but it's a fairly high degree of salt per amount of water.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these are washed every single day. Sometimes they're washed more than one
now,
time
washed,
a day.
Now, are they brushing it on? Are they dipping the cheese
sometimes
in it?
Sometimes they're taking a sponge and washing them. Sometimes they're dipping it in. I'm thinking most of the time they're actually doing a washing so that it removes mold growth.
Oh, and a cheese like this would be aged how long? Washed how many days?
That one is not going to be aged super long. I would expect it to be 60 days or under.
Okay, so but every day for 60 days, each cheese
and
is
more at the beginning of the process, always more with anything, any of these cheeses, more attention in the beginning. And then as they get to be aging longer, not as much.
Okay, now our last cheese, Connie tells me, is actually a Limburger. It's a
Saputo
specialty cheese, and it's called a Liederkranz.
Yes, that is a Wisconsin cheese. And that has been made to simulate the Limburger. So it's a Liederkranz. It is a type of cheese made the same way. It's actually a washed rind cheese like the beer washed one. But it is extremely robust in aroma, and the appearance looks very
interesting. This one is not terribly strong. There's old stories in my family about, because they were German dairy farmers, right, about the Limburger cheese and the one that my grandmother would keep in the pantry for months and months. And once a year at Christmas, they would get it out, and only certain members of the family could even stand to eat it.
Yes, I've heard stories like that. Interestingly
part of these cheese lore and cheese legends, that's actually part of the charm of this whole thing.
Yeah.
It is.
So Limburger is known as the most stinky of the stinkies, but this is a younger one.
It is, and generally the aroma is stronger than the flavor.
Yeah, but you're right. Taste this one. I think this one's lovely. I don't think it's stinky at all. Am I wrong?
I would classify it in the stinky cheese family.
But
take that as a compliment.
Well, because
it's a good thing.
It's not so aged, so it's really it's very deeply flavored.
Yes. And it's the sort of thing that you would have with more of a hearty bread, for example.
It would
overwhelm a light cracker. But you just pair with things that complement. A beer would be great with that, a more robust beer, some fruit. It's just whatever you happen to like.
This is lovely.
Did you have one, Lana?
I had one. I'm kind of cheesed out here. This is wonderful. Thanks to Connie for coming in and talking about all this wonderful cheese experience. Iowa has experienced a cheese festival, a cheese
Renaissance.
Celebration, get out there and taste things. We've been talking.
And if I just might interject, Wheatsfield is growing.
We are renovating. Yes,
we're renovating, and we have a new cheese case and department area coming soon. By Christmas, we'll be there.
By Christmas, okay.
We have lots of new products coming in as soon as Monday.
Oh!
This coming Monday, I just placed an order for some very interesting Blue Jay, which is a blue with juniper berries in it.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yes.
Where's that made?
Wisconsin.
Oh.
So I just placed an order. We'll be here Monday. And
I'll be right
over. Encourage you to come and see what we have. We'd be happy to try samples and everything.
And Connie is often available to
ask questions.
Yes. To give her opinion, her considered opinions. Thank you for being on the show, Connie.
Absolutely.
Thank you for
Thank
coming.
You.
And three cheers for all those farmers out there who take care of cows and sheep and the cheesemakers. Yes. I think someplace it says, blessed are the cheesemakers. I believe in that. Yes. I want to mention that KHOI is celebrating its fourth birthday on August 13th from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. at 410 Douglas. Come down and join us. There'll be a block party with basketball, barbecue, and blueberry pie, and a book sale. A lot of good alliteration there. Celebrate our fourth anniversary. Do come down for the book sale. It's starting to look really wonderfully crowded down here with books. And support this fine radio station. This is community radio. We are all better for being in this project together. And another upcoming thing. If you haven't yet gone to a Wheatsfield summer tour this evening, August 9th, Alluvial Brewing Company, find out about kombucha, Alluvial Brewing Company.
Oh, yeah,
north
more
of
fermentation. Yes.
That is tonight, August 9th. And the Iowa State Fair. What could be better than the Iowa State Fair? That is coming.
The cheese
up.
Show could be.
Yeah,
sorry,
well, it's
my prejudice.
Yeah. So, lots of things to do. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've had special guests from Wheatsfield, from the Wheatsfield Cheese Department, Connie Lawrence. We've been talking about cheese. What a nice thing. And we visited Helen Gunderson. Helen Gunderson's backyard. Found out a little bit about the possibilities.
Let's hear it for
backyard.
The cows.
Oh, moo. So we talked about cheese and backyard urban farming. Support this fine station. Support local farms. We've heard music by Kirkmount, a group from Nova Scotia. How nice. Lots of good fiddle tunes up there. We'll go out with the Flowers of Edinburgh, Pigeon on a Gate, and Jenny's Chickens. Yes. My name is Lana Knoxville.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Dalton Gackle, and he's one of our wonderful interns, soon to leave us. Thank you for all your help. Eat good food. And enjoy life. Yes, do that.